Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we have a returning guest. His name is John Heibusch, and he is the director, the executive director of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. But he's also the author of a new book that's on its way to becoming a bestseller. It's called The Shroud Conspiracy, and recently on the Today Show, it was listed as one of 12 must-read books for the spring. John, welcome back to the program, and again, congratulations on your book.
Thanks so much, Jerry. Glad to be with you.
Since you and I last talked, and we will be getting into Trump and talking about the Paris Accords and some comparisons there with Ronald Reagan, etc., but since you and I have talked, I've read the book, The Shroud Conspiracy, and so has my wife, and enjoyed it very much.
Well, that's good to hear. Hopefully you enjoyed reading it as much as I did writing it.
It's really fascinating. Now, I don't want to get into a spoiler alert, but I do have some questions for you, but maybe I should ask those off the air because I don't want to reveal the plot. But go ahead, for those that you want to, you know, pitch the idea to, go ahead and tell as much as you can without giving a spoiler alert.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Jerry. One of the most important religious artifacts known to mankind is the Shroud of Turin, the burial cloth of Jesus Christ. And while it might be one of the most revered relics in all of religious history, it's also one of the most controversial in that, over half of the world, and particularly science, will forever believe that it's a fake from the medieval period, but in the other half of the world believes it's very, very real and portrays the image on the shroud of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And so you might well imagine, with the controversy as heated as this has been over the shroud, I felt that it would make for an excellent backdrop in which to tell a story, a religious thriller, a mystery. And I think it has. It's come out in the form now of a novel I've written called The Shroud Conspiracy. And it's a page-turner, and I think that your listeners will really like it.
It's a novel. It's kind of based on a factual backdrop, but it is a novel, and obviously some aspects of it are totally fictitious. But, you know, it's very interesting. If you don't mind, can we talk about the shroud itself for just a second?
Sure.
The shroud is the most scientifically studied artifact in the whole world, according to my understanding. And what's really fascinating is that there are even disciplines within science that have only arisen in the last generation or so, especially with space age technology, that have actually been able to determine more aspects of the shroud, all pointing to its authenticity scientifically. And it's really a fascinating thing. The carbon 14 dating that they did in 1988 was from a small portion of a part of the cloth that many believe is just part of a rewoven part of the cloth. And so while the actual dating of that part was accurate and said it was from the Middle Ages, that's only because that particular part of the cloth was indeed from the Middle Ages. Meanwhile, you have in the Shroud of Turin, you have this image that was created in a way that modern science can't even duplicate with all the modern machinery and technology that we have to this day.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Jerry. In fact, that science that has grown up around all these newly available technologies has a name for it. It's called syndonology, and it's ripe with examples of tests that have been done on the shroud to do exactly what you said, to try to legitimize it and authenticate it, or in some people's cases, the same science used to essentially destroy its authenticity. So you've chosen to address one on the carbon-14 side. You're right that in the 1980s, the tests that were done using carbon dating were done on patches to the material, patches that were applied by a group of poor Clare nuns in the Middle Ages. So it's not surprising at all that a patch that would be examined through carbon dating that knowingly stems from the Middle Ages would appear as it's coming from the Middle Ages. So no surprise there.
I would think of it this way. Suppose you were at a trial, and on one table they put all the evidence of, let's say, just peer-reviewed studies about the Shroud of Turin, arguing for its authenticity and that this was actually the burial cloth of Jesus Christ, or at least that this, you know, it was not painted on. It was not faked. It was not this. So those things arguing for its authenticity, if you stack them up, it would be a very high pile. If on the other hand, on this other table, you put the carbon 14 dating, it would just be this one study. So you compare the two, and again, we're talking about science versus science. The shroud is, I think it's genuine. I think it's a snapshot of the resurrection. The moment the Lord resurrected, poof, somehow this coronal discharge was left there. The blood is there. It's human blood. It's in all the five major wounds of Christ. It's AB positive and so forth. So you got to read the book, The Shroud Conspiracy, which again is a novel based on this, but very, very interesting read. Now, speaking of science, John Heibusch, as the executive director of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, I understand that there was a parallel time to which that we see Trump wanting to get away from the Paris Accords, despite the pleas of many people from many nations, including the Pope. Ronald Reagan had kind of a parallel back in his day related to the environment. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, President Reagan, like any president, came into office having inherited from Jimmy Carter and previous presidents certain environmental laws and restrictions. And, you know, you can go back to the days of Richard Nixon when the Environmental Protection Agency was created, as was the passage of the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. And so when President Reagan had to come and essentially determine, you know, how with how much regulatory scrutiny was he going to enforce these laws at a time when the American economy was in a terrible shambles, jobs were hard to find, and the regulatory restrictions on businesses across the nation as a result of overzealous environmental regulators were putting Americans out of work every day. And so Ronald Reagan, day to day, had to make decisions whether or not it was with respect to the Montreal protocols that really were the earliest indicators of climate change, and what would be done internationally to promote the reduction in fluorocarbons. That was one President Reagan had to deal with. The fighting of acid rain, the designation of wilderness areas across the country and parklands, and the farm bills. Every one of these things in one way or another affected the environment, but at the same time affected Americans' ability to go to work every day. And the hallmark of Ronald Reagan's presidency on the environmental front involved a balance, really. The president was not, as some historians would paint, an anti-environmentalist, but what he was someone of real measure that always wanted to make sure if we were going to protect the environment that we found a balanced way to also protect American jobs. And he saw that through. As we speak, I know President Trump, taking yet another page from the Reagan playbook, is using the very same themes. You know, I personally don't believe President Trump is some anti-environmentalist. I believe he is what he said during his campaign. He is very, very strongly pro-American jobs and pro-American business, and he's going to make sure that if the United States has to comply with international accords, it puts the United States' interests, jobs, and the economy first. And I think that's what you see a lot of this controversy about the Paris Accords really, really being all about.
One thing I noticed in a statement you have made about Ronald Reagan, you said that he would promote American principles, but he would wrap it in optimism, humility, and humor. Now, I can picture the face of Ronald Reagan, And then when I see some of the photos of Donald Trump, maybe they should tell him, hey, look, buddy, stop scowling because the left will use these photos, you know, to your disadvantage. And, you know, maybe Trump is espousing the right views, but not doing it in a way that's, you know, promoting friendly feelings, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting observation, Jerry, because I, at least as it relates to the two very different men carry themselves, what I always found, and I, the American people found, just remarkably important about Ronald Reagan was that when he communicated, he always did so from an underlying standpoint of being optimistic about America's future, regardless of the difficulty and the complexity of the problem we might face. At the end of the day, he always was able to paint for the American people a vision that he was pointing towards. And he would tie his solutions to that vision always in a positive way. In President Trump's style, he seems to oftentimes take a very reverse approach to try to achieve the same ends. he'll talk about how miserable of a situation we might find ourselves in, and how miserable the world might be if we don't do something about it. But what's oftentimes lacking is this forward-looking positive vision at the end of the day that I think the American people need to hear and see and touch and feel and understand so that they can, yearn towards that same solution. And so a lot of it is semantics, and it may sound like it's a simple fix, but in semantics, what you say is oftentimes tied to your very inner person, and I think President Trump has a way of espousing how he feels based upon negatives he thinks we should move away from, and Ronald Reagan was always positives that he felt we should move towards, and that's a very different thing.
You know, it's interesting. In some ways, President Obama, I don't respect his policies. I don't agree with his policies. I mean, he, in a sense, his work continues to promote the idea, the actual practice of literally tens of millions of Americans remaining in a perpetual underclass so that the Democratic Party can continue with their base. Oh, and let's add more with the immigrants and so on. But he did have a style and a way to communicate that was Reagan-esque in the positive way while still selling you a bill of goods in the actual policy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And I always felt it was the mathematics you're talking about, or the math of division. It was, how can I get the American people to get behind me by dividing people into groups and setting them off against each other, and always creating an enemy that people could shoot at. There's a huge dividing line between that approach of dividing and conquering to achieve victory, which Ronald Reagan would never have a part of, and the way that President Reagan actually governed, which had nothing to do with dividing. It was all about uniting, and he tried to get Americans of all stripes, blue collar and white collar, for example, to understand that we were all in the same boat together, and we were all going to sink or swim based upon our ability to come together. And that's a very, very different world outlook. And I think it is what united America during the Reagan presidency.
Mm-hmm. And really, honestly, he's one of the most effective presidents of the 20th century. And I would say among conservatives, he would be, hands down, the best president of the 20th century. Okay, we are out of time, but again, I'll mention the name of your book. It's The Shroud Conspiracy. And that is a novel, and it's by our guest who's been on this portion of the program, John Heibusch, who is the executive director of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. And his website is johnheibusch.com. John is J-O-H-N. Heibusch is spelled H-E-U-B-U-S-C-H. John, thanks so much for being with us. All the best to you.
Thanks so much, Jerry.
And congratulations on your novel.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now.